Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to episode 80 of the Rocket Punchcast. Are you okay?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm good.
As always, I'm your host, Cameron Kearns, here along with my partner in crime, Will Turkhurst. Will of Avenir, semi-cocaine, LSD, tripping out move. What's going on?
No. I was like, oh, look out. We got a badass over here.
we are badass over here. We're streaming live on Twitch. I guess it should bring this up for people who are just joining us in there. We had a question last week about somebody who asked, hey, is this a live stream or are you guys just on a, you know, pre-recorded video? No, this is 100% live. You can join us in chat, talk with us. We will talk back to you while we're recording the podcast, have a little bit of fun for everyone who is joining us via Twitch there. But other than that, Will, how are you doing, man?
I'm vertical. I'm alive.
It's always good things.
Yeah,
always very good things.
I'm not gonna say nah. Let's shut it down. Rock Punch is over. We're done.
No, we're never over. Can't stop, won't stop. There's a song there from P. Diddy. I can't remember. Is that something like that? I don't know.
Something along those lines. See, when I do the whole like I'm alive thing, I'm really thinking about that Shinedown song.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Shinedown. That wasn't too bad.
You know. They're not as popular as they should be. It's like most rock bands from that time.
But we're not here to talk about music. We're here to talk about games. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
If you want to listen to us talk about music, look at Tankin's Mike this week.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. But let's jump to our first thing that we always like doing. It's table talk. We're going to jump in here. We have on the list, we had a lot of fun at the Asylum Comics game night.
Yeah.
This past week. For people who don't know who live in the area in Huntsville, Alabama, Asylum Comics has a game night every Friday night. Board games, video games, any game you can play.
They're downtown on Clinton Row, right across from the parking garage in downtown.
Yep, sure. But we played some games. You and I basically teamed up on some.
Yeah.
We finally did the Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle co-op.
Yeah, I did not realize that first, like, really drab level was just the tutorial.
No, wait, that was just the tutorial?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I was going to say, we played it, and it seemed pretty easy because it only had a few, like, standard enemies.
And it also wouldn't let me crank it past medium difficulty.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Like, how did you feel about that? Even just from the intro part, how did you feel about that? We've played the single player, but I didn't even know it had multiplayer.
Yeah, I think we need to do a stream.
Okay, we could do a stream.
Or we co-op through some of that.
Little Rocket Punch live streams every Thursday.
Yeah, I really do believe that that game has a lot more potential than we give it credit for.
Okay. I definitely want to...
Considering it's got stupid rabbits in it.
Yeah, hey, look. They're stupid. Good stupid. Silly stupid.
Oh, yeah. No, but they're still stupid.
Yeah. But we... I'm glad that was just the demo because it was very bare bones, and I'm hoping that the actual true multiplayer is a little bit more in-depth.
Actually have real terrain and not like blue cubes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm hoping that they just expand on that a little bit more once you get into the full game. The other thing we played for game night was Mario Kart 8, a de facto standard, on the Switch.
Irma Lurd.
How'd you do in Mario Kart 8?
I got my ass whipped. I learned how bad I was at Mario Kart because I haven't been playing it.
It's been a little bit too, but I was wondering why people, like, the computer was passing us so much. I'm like, wait, we're playing 150cc? Holy crap.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, okay, well, where's the highest difficulty? All right, crank it up and let's go.
At least it wasn't 200cc. God forbid, I would have...
We need a 200cc.
No, we don't.
Yes, we do.
No one needs 200cc in their life.
We need 400cc stat.
Oh, God. You might as well burn the console to the ground. Like, it'll burn in flames in your hand as you're playing it.
No, it won't. It's a Tegra.
The fan will kick in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you won't be able to hear the sound over the fan, but it'll do it.
But I guess other than those are the overall things we've done. What specifically have you been playing this week?
Still playing Stardew Valley on the Switch.
Okay. You're still enjoying that?
Yeah. I still haven't found the correct character to waifu in that game yet, so...
Is it that hard?
It's more me not caring about that part of it. And I'm like, oh, I got a sword. Let's go to the mines. I must kill the slimes and make my wheat crops grow.
You're focusing on everything else and you're just like, oh, you know, I guess I could...
At some point.
get married, quote unquote. Sure.
Yeah.
You do that.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm going to have an empire built on grains and animals, carcasses.
And all that good stuff, is that it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, many a slime have died by my hand.
Well, so wait, are you playing Stardew Valley or are you playing Dragon Quest?
No, they have slimes in there.
You better not tell Dragon Quest. They're going to start suing people. But no, I have a dilemma myself because I just want to get one for right now, and it's between Stardew Valley and The Flame and the Flood.
Well, you've already played The Flame and the Flood.
Okay, so I should get Stardew Valley.
Yes.
Okay.
Because Stardew Valley on the Switch also has multiplayer, and it doesn't have that anywhere else.
That's true. I guess asking everybody in chat, should I get Stardew Valley for Switch or The Flame and the Flood for Switch? Let us know in chat. I'm curious what other people think as well. I feel like the answer is going to be Stardew Valley, but I ask anyway.
Also, I mean, I have the whole soundtrack for Stardew Valley, and it's damn
good. It's really good. We were listening to it in here. You had it playing. I'm like, wow, that is really good music.
Yeah. One dude. Who'd have thought? He's jack of all trades.
Yeah. What?
TW Swordsman and Credible Throat Gaming both say Stardew Valley.
Okay.
TW Swordsman, why are you asking
us? Why are you even asking us? I have to.
You already own Flame in the Flood on PC.
That's true. And I own a PS4 too. Got it on sale.
So get Stardew.
Okay. All right. What else have you been playing?
Well, obviously Destiny 2. The game that you haven't been playing.
Totally blanked out for a week. I've been so busy with work. Totally forgot about that. How was Iron Banner this week?
Well, when we could get Chaz on while I was on, then it was good. when I'm playing solo, let's see. I was doing well. My teams that I kept getting put in were real bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my KD ratio was 2+.
Wow.
And everybody else was, like, under 0.
Ooh.
So, it was no bueno. Hey, Credible Threat Gaming, we'll find out how good you are once it launches on PC.
Ooh, snap. But no, I guess, I know we had a talk. Apparently, Lord Saladin's voice is not as enthusiastic.
No, he's very somber, and I want, like, that Lord Shaxx, like, yes, this is amazing! I need that back in my life, and I'm not getting that with Saladin.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I haven't heard him, so I can't give you an honest opinion on what I think, but I could definitely understand that. You want a little bit more oomph, you know, this is amazing. Oh, Shaxx is just so awesome in Iron Banner. I just love him.
I'm so sorry, Chris.
Credible Threat making awesome jokes in chat.
One hand on the mouse and one hand chained to my work PC.
Anything else?
I mean, Dokken Battle, but that always is a thing.
Hashtag eye roll. I mean, as far as I can, eye roll.
No.
On Dokken Battle. Oh, my God. But, no, okay, I get to talk about what I played. I actually played a couple of different games I was pretty excited about. Number one, first thing I played, of course, Middle-Earth Shadow of War.
Mm-hmm.
We did that for our Rocket Punch live stream last week. The archive of that video will be up here this week. For people watching Twitch, it'll be on Monday. So if you're listening to this via audio, don't worry. It'll probably be up by the time you hear this. But I played that game. The game is pretty good. There are a couple of kind of small picks and gripes that I have with it. But it's not bad. Like, I can't complain at all about the overall game experience I've had with it. It's Shadow of War. It's just like Shadow of Mordor, at least the feel. I felt like Talion was a little slow and clunky, but so like as I started getting into the game, some of the big open kind of, I don't say it's not open world, but kind of the sandbox areas they put you in when you're going around and starting to kill the orcs was really cool. Apparently they're like, I didn't understand how deep the orcs come at you. Like there's an assassin orcs that will just randomly all of a sudden you're walking around in the world and they hit you from behind and they start attacking you regardless of what you're
almost
doing.
Almost kind of like the assassins in Legend of Zelda.
Oh, a little bit like that. Like one snuck up on me. I didn't even have a clue. I was like, oh my God. And he's like, I'm going to get you, man flesh. Whatever the Uruk say in the game. But I had a pretty good amount of fun with it. Like I said, there were some picks and gripes and stuff. Some of the menu stuff, like the skill tree. I don't even know what's going on with the skill tree, and I felt like I was just clicking stuff to unlock it, because the game, every time I got a level up, I'd get a skill point, and the game kept reminding me, hey, use a skill point, hey, use a skill point. And I'm like, okay, fine. But there was really not a very in-depth and, in my opinion, proper way of explaining the skill tree. The items, as far as the upgrades, are pretty simple. Just sword, dagger, cloak, armor, and there's one other in the bow. That's it. Those are your five pieces of armor that you'll collect to get better stuff with as you kill a stronger captains. I did get killed twice, once by an orc captain.
Okay.
And it was so I saw the nemesis system in work here. He got promoted, and he ended up halfway across the map. And I was like, no, screw this. I'm coming for you. I hit my like elven super speed stride, and I ran across the map past all the other orcs and all the other enemies, found this dude, and killed him, and did like the little ultimate elven rage move, and I just filled him full of arrows. He didn't even say anything. He kind of turned around, boom, 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 dead. I was like, good, give me my weapon. I'm out of here. Revenge kill, baby. Woo! But it's fun. It's not bad. Credible Threat Gaming says, is the Wicked Witch of the West in Uruk in their camera? I don't know. I didn't get that far enough into the game. I'll have to let you guys know later if that is the case.
I think he was going based off of the way you described the voice in there.
Oh, yeah. My pretties. But no, it's a pretty good game. If you liked Shadow of Mordor, I think you'll like Shadow of War. But it's not bad. Again, you know, maybe I need to get a little bit further into it, but there's a little bit of clunkiness. Some of the menus and stuff are a little eh. But
it's so like a 3 out of 5.
I'd say 3.5, maybe 4, if I had to rate it right now.
Gotcha.
That would be around my side there. But I played that. I also played Uncharted: The Lost Legacy, which I also did for a Rocket Punch live stream. Surprisingly enough, I did an After Dark stream for like an hour because I couldn't sleep. And I played through like the first hour and a half of that game. If you played Uncharted 4, that's exactly what this game is. It has female protagonists. It's got Chloe, got Nadine. But it was really good. And it's Uncharted. So it was excellent. I had a great time with it. Looks great, plays well. But had a lot of fun. Definitely, if you like Uncharted in any way, definitely check out Lost Legacy. It's definitely worth a pick. Okay. And then, oh, go ahead.
No, I was saying, okay.
Yeah, and then more Cuphead. Played more Cuphead.
Yeah.
I finally got to the second kind of island, and I killed like the first two bosses on that island. Like the weird clown looking dude who's on the roller coaster. People who've played Cuphead before. I took him down. He wasn't too bad. He gets really hard at like the last phase of his fight. It's kind of tough. Mm-hmm. Other than that, he's not too bad. Not too bad. Okay. But again, that game continues to impress me. A very great presentation, art style, music. You saw a little bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool. I'm having a lot of fun with that. A lot of fun with that.
Good.
A lot of fun with that. So, is that it? Are we done?
I mean, according to TW Swordsman, we got to go fast.
We got to go fast? Well, we don't have to go. We like taking our time and having fun and having great conversations, but sometimes we do go fast. Sometimes, not Sonic fast, but like Sanic fast. You know, like, you go fast.
Oh, God, help us.
But if you did not know already, you're tuning in here. This is the Rocket Punch Cast, a Rocket Punch production. This is where groups of friends join this table to talk about video games into microphones. You can catch us every Sunday as we recorded live on twitch.tv/rocketpunchlive. If you can't catch us as we record it live, you can also watch the archive and catch the audio on podcast services around the globe every Tuesday of each week. If you don't know who Rocket Punch is, you got to figure out, like, what do these guys do? What are they all about? You can always go to our website at rocketpunchgo.com. It's where you can find all of the content we make and everything that we do. If you have questions for us during the show, definitely throw them up in chat. Like we said, we're constantly watching chat, so if you have questions, we love interacting with you guys during the show. So throw them in there. We'll answer them at the end of the show if we do get any. And also, if you are watching the show and you like what you're seeing and what we're doing, you can always help support the show over at patreon.com/rocketpunch. For as little as a dollar, you can help keep the lights on, as we like to say. here, help keep our projects going, and also get some cool swag, buttons, digital goodies, wallpapers, all sorts of cool stuff from us, the Rocket Punch House, as well.
Actually, and if you're a patron listening to this, and there's a property of ours that you want a wallpaper from that I have not made up to your satisfaction, let me know.
We'll get on it.
Yeah.
We have top men on it. Is that?
I'll work on it.
Top men.
No, we're not that cool. We're not in an Indiana Jones film.
Some updates as well, like we always like to tell people as well. If you're curious about what content is going to be released this week from us, you can always go to rocketbunchshow.com. There is the weekly schedule posted, so you'll know exactly what's going on this week. I think we got it's quiet week this week as well, but next one's going to be pretty, pretty big. We didn't get to mention it last Friday, but if you have not found out yet, the newest community creator spotlight is up. It's Pinball Undesirables.
Yep.
Stephen Young, he came down and talked to us about Pinball Undesirables, his pinball streaming project that he has going on. It was pretty awesome. We talked about pinball and beer and games and all sorts of crazy stuff, and kind of just also building up Twitch communities, kind of how that goes and the good things and the not great things you could do. But definitely check that out over on our Creator Spotlight podcast feed or rockmunchgo.com as well. Also, to get people ready, we've got a lot of different streams planned. We're going to go from what's coming up soon to what's in the future. This Thursday, if you're watching or listening to this, we will have a viewer's choice stream. So what's going to happen there is if you follow us on Facebook and Twitter, we'll have a poll up. There will be three games that you can choose from. And then that Thursday, we will pick the winner of that poll and actually play that game and stream it for you guys live on twitch.tv/RocketPunchLive for our Rocket Punch Live event. So definitely, if you are curious to see a game, we'll have one of the three up there. It depends on what I have in my library, but we'll definitely be able to stream that for everyone there this Thursday. Next week begins Halloween 2, the return of Halloween.
Yes.
I'm super excited about that. To give people more detail, what that's going to entail with is that every day, Monday through Thursday, we will be streaming a spooky, spoopy game or some Halloween-y themed game. I think we've got the schedule pretty locked down.
Yeah, I think we've done fairly good at that.
Mm-hmm. But that'll be next week, Monday through Thursday, because unfortunately Friday I will be headed out on vacation, so I can't stream on Friday. But we'll be going Monday through Thursday as well. And depending on the stream, we will also be giving away some games as well during that week. So definitely some incentive to tune in, and you might be able to pick up a free game code for your pleasure and enjoyment.
Yes, but we have been building up a little database of games.
We have. Working hard for you. But we'll definitely have those game codes as well. We're going to probably our Rocket Punch cast in Tank and Spank is going to be Halloween-y themed in some form or fashion.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty fun next week. So definitely if you like Halloween, you're excited for that content, be sure to tune in here on Twitch and on our website, Rocket Punch Go, to see all of our cool stuff that we're going to have for you guys. And the big one, I think perhaps the biggest thing that we are preparing, if you have not heard, Extra Life is just around the corner.
Yes.
And we have some pretty, pretty big plans. So people who are watching on video, you won't see this until Monday. But if you are listening via audio, it should be live. We will be doing basically revealing our Extra Life 2017 plans for this year. It's 49 hours.
Yes.
Of playing games over the weekend.
God help us.
we talked about it. Last year we did 24, so we're like, nah, let's do 48. We're crazy.
And then leading right into that, the 49th hour is the Rocket Punch cast episode.
Weird. So that's going to be a great episode if you're tuning in right now.
If you want to see sleep deprived, possibly inebriated, you know,
us talking about video games in the microphones, then definitely tune in. Throughout that entire event, we'll have special guests coming in, playing games with us. We will be doing giveaways and prizes for various different games. We'll be playing a lot of different games, single player, multiplayer, a lot of cool things to get people to jump in our stream, interact with us. You'll be able to chat with us as well as help donate to our cause so that we can raise some money for our children's Miracle Network hospital that we've chosen over on our Extra Life page. But the Extra Life page will go live tomorrow. For people that are tuning in, go ahead and mark your calendars. November 17th at 7 p.m. is when we will start our Extra Life 2017 stream. Unfortunately, we can't do the game day because we'll be at BlizzCon that week. But, you know, darn.
Oh, darn.
But we will be available 2 weeks later, the 17th through the 19th, that weekend. So go ahead and mark your calendars. Believe me, if you follow us on social, you will be fully prepared to know what's going on there. We're pretty excited. And also, once our Extra Life page goes live, we also have made an Extra Life t-shirt with our Extra Life 2017 logo. That will be rolling live tomorrow as well. So if you are wanting to go ahead and get the jump on supporting us with our Extra Life team, you can go ahead and purchase that shirt. It'll be a Teespring page. And the cool thing about that is that 100% of the proceeds will be going directly to Extra Life. We will not be making any profit on this.
Yep. We won't make a dime, but I think people enjoy the shirt.
I think people are going to like the shirt too. I think we, with the time we had and the creativity we have between us, I think we did pretty good.
I think it came out okay.
I think so too. But yeah, and as well as with Extra Life, all the donations that we get for our Extra Life page will be, it's 100% charitable. We're not making any money off of this project. We're just going to have a great time streaming games, giving away games, having a fun time with people and everybody coming in. So we're pretty excited about that. So now we are on to the fun segment we always like doing. Our Patreon section. This is a section specifically designed, like I said earlier, if you want to help support the show, you can go to patreon.com/rocketpunch and donate as little as a dollar to help support the show and help support Rocket Punch. First order of business for people, the Pinball Undesirables Creator Spotlight episode did go live last week, but we have not released the bonus session just yet. That will be live probably tomorrow. So if you're our patron as well at the $3 or more tier, expect that awesome bonus episode this week. That was pretty good. We had a lot of crazy questions, a lot of interesting questions. It's always fun talking with Steven.
I think Steven did probably our longest episode yet, as far as that goes. And sitting in the back, it was hard for me to not kind of giggle at some of the stuff.
Giggle?
Yes. Well, he made me laugh. It was good.
Yes. Neglected kid says, want to read a joke. Depends on the joke.
Keep it semi-family friendly, please.
But also, yeah, but definitely be ready for that. Also, we always like to give weekly shout-outs. So if you support us at the $10 or higher tier, we will do weekly shout-outs for you, your brand, project, or anything of choice. And of course, we always like to give a shout-out to our good old friend, Chris Scott, over at Credible Threat Gaming, who is still chained to his desk and his computer, trying to get away from work so he can stream some games. But he has his other cohorts supporting Credible Threat Gaming as well.
No, man. Okay. I'm happy for him. They got a chicken dinner.
They did get the chicken dinner. Round of applause for CTG getting that chicken dinner. But what Credible Threat Gaming is, guys, they're a streaming YouTube group. They stream and play video games there. You can always check them out on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 8:30 to 10:30 p.m. Lately, they've been playing a lot of PUBG. They did play some Rocket Punch, or no, some Rocket League.
Yeah.
They did some Rocket League earlier. That was really cool. That was really, really fun. And so definitely go out there, support them, follow them on their channel. Definitely help support those guys out. They're doing a lot of great stuff there. Oh, that's a big joke.
Don't read that one.
So now that we're done with the Patreon section, it is time to jump in to topics of the show. First topic of the show, this was an interesting one. I think this caught everybody off guard.
Oh, yeah?
Humble Bundle. We know it.
Yeah.
Hopefully everybody who's watching and tuning in knows it. It's a pretty awesome kind of charitable donation. You pay money. Basically, you can get a lot of cool free games, indie, AAA, things like that. And it goes to, I think they go to various charities each time they release it each month. I think there's so many things. They have a store, they have game bundles, book bundles, all sorts of things right there. Well, interestingly enough, some news broke out that I don't think anybody came was surprised and able to or was ready to see. IGN purchased Humble Bundle.
I don't know how I feel about this.
We're going to talk about it because that's an interesting conversation to have about IGN, which people don't know. They're basically games journalists, journalist group over in San Francisco. But they purchased Humble Bundle, the company, and they're now going to be basically running Humble Bundle. And I guess one of the questions I wanted to ask about that is, what does that mean for the game charity service for Humble Bundle? And also as well, should we be concerned about this and kind of the journalistic integrity with IGN when they do talk about Humble Bundle stuff? Because this does bring up somewhat of a quandary that people could kind of be like, I don't know about this, because there could be conflicts. They could try pushing Humble Bundle a little bit more to try and pad their profits. I mean, but first and foremost, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I'm not too sure about that. That it's kind of like when, GameStop owns Game Informer.
Okay.
So anything in Game Informer related to GameStop, I always take with a grain of salt, because it's one of those, like, I don't know. Wait, who wrote the article? Okay, no, that's total garbage.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it depends on what's going on, and I guess who actually has that journalistic integrity. The way IGN's been going lately, I can't say I'd trust them to have that.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. A lot of their big names have been leaving, and it's been hard for them to keep anybody on hand. They're not doing great financially.
Mm.
So I understand this is a long-term, like, yay, cool, we can pad the wallet and keep ourselves around.
Yeah.
I just don't know how I feel about this. It's one of those, like, I like Humble Bundle because a lot of the stuff I buy through them, it goes to charity.
Yeah.
But how long is that going to last?
Yeah, is that going to change? Is there going to do something else? Credible Threat over in chat does bring up a good point. Humble Bundle publishes games, makes that very suspect. But his opinion, he guesses that they'll mess it up. This is an interesting move. I feel the move is made out of a little bit of fear. Like, games journalism in and of itself is not doing too hot as of late. Last little bit. I don't think they're making nearly as much money as, you know, with the rise of streamers like us, like Credible Threat, like other people that are out on the internet. I think some of their revenue, stuff like reviews and kind of page things stuff, a lot of people are going less and less to IGN and doing more like following social and following personalities and people online outside of that games journalism. That's the same for not only IGN, but I think GameSpot, Polygon, places like that, like big reputable names.
Yeah, but still we have places like Kotaku, which still seem to be doing fairly well.
Yeah, and I think that to a certain extent, Kotaku is a little bit slightly different. They have different angles because Kotaku has true journalism where they're actually breaking scoops and going in like, we've got sources and they're giving us this information. These are leaks. These weren't supposed to happen. Whereas IGN and GameSpot, a lot of the stuff they're reporting is just like, here's the news.
Here's the press release.
Yeah, and stuff like that. And so I think this was a move made to basically find other ways of revenue to get more money.
Yeah. We all know this is a money move at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like, that's all this is. It's like, we need something to shore up the coffers.
Yep.
I just don't... I don't trust them to run it right.
Yeah.
At least most of the time, GameStop doesn't touch Game Informer.
And then just reading from the article we pulled this from Polygon, they had an update. A representative for Humble Bundle provided Polygon with the following statement from Mitch Galbraith, Executive VP and General Manager at IGN. Quote, "Editorial integrity is something we take very seriously at IGN, and I am confident that we will strike the right balance when it comes to our coverage of Humble Bundle and the games they sell. Our readers and customers have always come first, and that won't change." You know, but again, it's easy to say one thing.
But will they actually do it?
Will they actually follow through? That's a good point. And do you think that the service will change? Do you think they'll just keep running Humble Bundle as is? Do you think they'll try and wiggle in more IGN-esque stuff in there? I'm sure we'll see it advertised more on IGN videos and whatnot.
If if it stays the same, you're going to see a bigger push on the IGN media side to push Humble Bundle.
Really, you think?
Yeah. I think they'll give up a certain amount of their ad revenue spots to actually push that. That would be my guess. Okay. Just because then it's one hand washing the other.
Oh, fair enough. And I guess then kind of one of the more important questions, like, should we be concerned about this move by IGN as far as journalistic integrity goes? Like, should we have concern? Like, I don't know if this is the right move. Is this going to start warping some stuff? Could this maybe taint Humble Bundle and kind of their integrity as what they're doing as a charitable organization?
I think the bigger issue is not tainting Humble Bundle itself, but how IGN is going to handle them. Okay. So that's for me. If for whatever reason, if they decide that they're going to overhaul Humble Bundle from the ground up, they will cease to get my business.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's never,
there's a lot of gamers that have very long memories too. So you got to handle that right, because a lot of people, myself included, still haven't played Call of Duty ever since they screwed over Treyarch.
Oh, really? You've not played?
No, after all of that stuff happened between Activision and that, I haven't played a Call of Duty since.
Man, wow, okay. I mean, stick to your guns. I'm going to respect that. I just stick to the single-player campaigns.
I still play all the Blizzard games, so Activision still gets my money. But
it's just
the franchise.
If you had given them Call of Duty, it would have been from two different channels. Now it's just from one. So they are hurting a little bit. Teeny, tiny little bit.
Yeah, oh no, that drop of money that now goes to indies.
Yeah, but I'm curious. Like, of course, IGN's going to push their services more. Now that they have Humble Bundle, they're going to push a lot more. But one thing I'm concerned about is if they start looking at books and saying, oh, we're going to take a little bit more of the profit from the games that are purchased, and we're going to give a little bit less to some of the charities, and I don't think that's right.
No, it would be... Let me go ahead and find... you don't have a Scumbag Steve hat around
here. No, I do not have a Scumbag Steve hat.
All right, well, imaginary Scumbag Steve hat on. IGN will probably cut all of that down to like 10%. Watch.
I don't...
I trust them to ruin it.
I hope
I know they that's wouldn't. Me being a negative Nancy, but I don't trust IGN.
Yeah, I hope they don't do it, but... Like, if they this is obviously a money move. They need better profits. Humble Bundle's pretty healthy. Everybody likes Humble Bundle. Really, there's never been like a negative thing about Humble Bundle. Or it could be something where I hope they wouldn't do, but like they would start switching out games. Like maybe like they've had some pretty good games on the platform, and maybe start taking some of those AAA or like big hit indie games off. And I think that would be a bad move. I think that'll backfire on them in a big way, and I don't think they don't want that. They don't need that right now. Not at all.
I don't foresee it going well if they do that at all. It'll probably stop existing. Unless, like I said, unfortunately gamers have very long memories when it comes to that.
Yeah, very true. But we'll definitely see. I'm curious what everybody's thoughts are in chat. You can let us know what you guys think about this kind of IGN Humble Bundle purchase and merger. Let us know in chat, or if you're listening via audio, you can definitely tweet us at Rocket Punch Go. Let us know what you guys think of this particular topic. You know, it's business, but hopefully, you know, we can only hope for the best to see what they're going to do there. But now we're going to talk about the big topic, the fun topic, I think, picking a day, because it was actually, we had a little bit of trouble. I was sitting here like, man, there's not really a good topic to talk about. But then I remembered something that I think we haven't talked about, which I think would be really cool to talk about, and that is preserving video game history.
Okay.
And the reason I bring this up is that I just finished watching the NoClip video documentary series on The Witcher 3.
Okay.
From Danny O'Dwyer of GameSpot fame. And really sitting there thinking, I always loved watching those documentaries, like The Witcher 3 and the Doom one were some of my favorites, and really thinking about, like, What are we doing to preserve video game history? Like, if anything, and, you know, should we be doing it? Should we not be doing it? What should we be doing? And just having a conversation about video game history, because if you think about it, we've had video games for, I'd want to say probably in the 30 to 40-ish year range, probably late 1970s when the first video game.
Ralph Baer. the original inventor of tennis for two in the 60s.
Okay, so it's even further than that.
Yeah.
But kind of when it picked up in mainstream, it was probably 70s.
Oh, yeah. Atari was like the first true mainstream.
Yeah, yeah. And so, looking at preserving video game history, like, what, at least as far as you know, what are we doing to preserve video game history? What are some of the things that you've seen and know of that we're working with to preserve video game history?
I need to correct myself. I was wrong on the name. William Higginbotham and Robert Dvorak.
Okay. Yeah. They did tennis for two.
Sorry. It's just one of those, like, let me check that. Some games are getting put into the Smithsonian as pieces of art.
Okay.
So, in that regards, like, the nation will upkeep those games as far as software, making sure they're good, all that kind of deal. As far as that, honestly, it's going to be the collectors that are really preserving it more than anybody else at this point. So we have the collectors going around, you know, buying up the old arcade cabinets, buying the consoles, doing all of that stuff. And I think that is going to bring it more into preserving than anything else. And a lot of people are not going to like the next statement. Pirates, who want every game ever released, those guys are going to be just the illegal BitTorrents. That all of that stuff is going to preserve gaming from then more than anything else.
Really?
That's my thought. I mean, because let's be real.
Huh.
Where are these games? Where are the cabinets now? You know, some of them just don't exist anymore, but people were able to get the ROMs and put them out there.
Yeah, and they're online. I mean, and they're still, even from a lot of the games back then, there are still a lot of games that aren't available to us now. Because it wasn't, preserving those games and preserving that history wasn't really thought about back in the day. Back in that time frame, you know?
Yeah.
And I think even for right now, some of the current stuff that's going on, NoClip, Danny O'Dwyer, I think is doing a fantastic job making those video game documentaries.
Well, he's not making a documentary in the game. He's making a documentary on the story behind that game.
Yeah.
Because those games are now on PlayStations, Xboxes all over the world. Yeah. So,
but at least preserving that history, like talking about the behind the scenes and the game development and like what goes, a lot of rich detail about what goes into what these guys are doing to make these games.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely.
We have Gamumentary. It's another, basically, they do the same thing that Danny O'Dwyer does. They do video game documentaries. I believe the first one they're working on, they got a deal with Nordic. They're doing the Darksiders series.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then they do a lot of other ones. They crowdfunded their stuff, I believe, via Kickstarter. And they're going to do a lot of documentaries on that. I'm super excited to see what they come out with on that front as well. Okay. I think there's the Video Game Museum. Let me double check that. But I believe there's a Video Game Museum where people can go in and, yeah, the National Video Game Museum, you can go in and actually see some of the video game history and games that have come out and kind of how they impacted the industry. So that's super, super cool. I mean, we're looking at pictures here. They've got like older consoles listed all the way through. We probably played a fair amount of those. So that's pretty awesome.
Next year, we need to go road trip this.
Oh, yeah. No, we'll visit the museum. We need to find out where it is. It's in Texas. There you go. Yeah. We'll go to Frisco, Texas.
Good. We need to rock and punch live from the Video Game Museum.
That would be super awesome. That would be really, really awesome. But, like, we have that museum, and we're building that stuff, but, like, even looking at other stuff besides, that's, like, the history and kind of the details behind those games, but what about how are we preserving the games we have right now? Like, I think current games right now, they're easy to preserve. I think with the digital age, they're always in the digital cloud or on some disk or something like that. But
yeah, they're going to be on server clusters.
Yeah, but like we talked about the older games like that before where they're on the cartridges or on the disks.
Or when it was literally a printed circuit board for the game.
Yep, or something like that. And now I think we are getting at the point, we'll put money on it. My thought is that when you get to a point where, I think we are getting to a point, probably the next console generation, at least for console games, you can you will be able, they'll be able to say, okay, it's backwards compatible with your older games. So if you get a PS5, guess what? If you bought your PS4 games digitally, guess what? You can carry them over. No problem. They'll still run.
That would be great.
And I think that I'm pretty sure that's going to be the same with Xbox One.
Xbox One's family. Been trying to retrofit the 360 and the original Xbox One architecture.
Yeah.
Software side forever. And I mean, they're trying. So good
and
on
I mean,
them.
And I mean, PC games in and of themselves have been able to do that forever. Like, I still have that floppy disk of Street Fighter 2. And if I wanted to and I could find a floppy disk, I could pop that in my computer and install it. And it should work.
That's because you're on an x86 architecture now.
Yeah.
And we really haven't changed the CPU architecture too much. And Windows can essentially run all of that. So that's not too big of a deal. The bigger issue is going to be from all the weird chipsets that consoles were using back in the day.
Well, and that's what we're doing, kind of walking in. That's what the console gamers are doing, or the console systems are doing right now. Now they're at x86. It's a lot easier to move from PC to PS4 to Xbox One back and forth. But even just thinking about consoles, you think back then there was no way of preserving that history and preserving those games. You had them on cartridges. If you could find the cartridge, you could rip it into an emulator, and you could find all sorts of emulators online. But as far as like some, again, you talked about pirates. So I guess that point right there. But as far as an official way, there is really not enough. Like a lot of those older consoles, the reason why people want backwards compatibility so much is to kind of keep those old games that they enjoyed playing so much. But, you know, you can play those old Super NES games, NES games. You know, now Nintendo has kind of come back with the not only the Virtual Console, if we ever hear about that for the Switch, but also the NES Classic and the Super NES Classic Editions. There's at least another official way of getting those games back. And I think those are great ways of preserving history because it's a miniature size of what the console looked like back then.
Yeah.
But there are still, like that, in a lot of those systems, those games' histories are still back. Like, unless you can find the console in the cartridge at, like, a mom-and-pop hand-me-down store that somebody just had in their attic and usually still works, then a couple of those games are lost to history.
Possibly. I mean, I don't know. From the PS1, that generation forward, I think it's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the generations before the PS1. Because Nintendo and Sony have been pushing out the remasters or the re-release of that game. Hell, the entire Vita, the reason why it still survives to this day on the software front is indies, PS1 classics, and PSP titles. Yeah. That you can still buy and download on them.
Very true.
So, yeah. Look, that's the only reason to still have a Vita at this point is to play the older games. Ooh, I can carry all my Final Fantasies from the PlayStation 1 era on it.
Until they release them. And I think companies now are getting better, like, regardless of what, at least focusing on a specifically preserving gaming history, when these, what's the word I'm thinking of? Like remasters, when they're bringing games back, they just brought Final Fantasy 9 back.
Yep.
And that's available for PS4. That's preserving that history.
Yeah.
A way of doing that. But there's still like some consoles and some games. I think kind of talking back on what we're doing to preserve those, local places that trade in older consoles, like we have one here in town in Huntsville called Rocket City Arcade.
Yeah, and then there's one in Madison.
Gaming Heaven, something like that?
Something along that line, yeah.
As well, but you can go in and you'll be able to find like older consoles like all the way back to NESs and Sega Genesis. And maybe even like some Sega CDs and other consoles like that. And you can purchase and still find like all the game cartridges and stuff that people have collected and traded in. You can go purchase those games. So if you really want to keep that history, if you played an NES and you remembered the feel of that system and blowing on the cartridge and popping it in and the clicks and the way it popped up in the system, like the good old fashioned way, and you want that, there are still avenues like that to get that experience. But I feel like they're dwindling and dwindling. Credible Threat in chat says Gamer's Paradise. There we go. That's what it is.
Yeah. I got my first-gen Xbox there, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I never had one. I always played my cousin Chuck's.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I had the GameCube, he had the Xbox, and another family member had a PlayStation, and we always had multiple controllers. That's how we did it.
It's easy enough. That's not bad. That's pretty good. But, yeah, no, it's... So I think now... kind of seeing, and especially we're talking about, I think there are paths in the industry in and of itself is doing very different ways of kind of preserving some of that history for games going forward. I don't know about games further back. There are people out there that are still trying to figure out how to keep those games.
Well, and Atari's coming out with their Atari Flashback console, essentially because they saw how well the NES and the SNES Classic are doing.
And we'll see how well that does. I'm putting money down, probably not that well, or not that great.
I don't know. Atari had some big sway with the generation before ours.
Oh, yeah. A Credible Threat brings up a good point. They're bringing back the Duke controller for Xbox One.
Hey, I'm buying one. I love the Duke.
Oh, my God. I hated the Duke. It was too big. Even if I have pretty good-sized hands, it was too big.
No. I get my meat hooks around the Duke. Let's go.
Oh, not a chance.
I love a controller that requires me to go rent a 2500 series pickup truck to buy.
Let's go, baby. Let's play some Xbox. Oh, God. You're crazy.
Yeah,
you're
man. Crazy. Oh, you don't remember the jokes that were going around back then where it's like, oh, man, I got to go borrow my dad's truck. I got to move my Xbox to my friend's place.
But talking about preserving gaming history, I think we've answered the question, should we do something? I think we agree, yes.
Absolutely.
Chat, let us know in the Twitch chat if you agree or disagree with preserving video game history. I'm pretty sure the answer is yes. What are some ways? I feel like we're doing all these different things, but I feel like there are still a couple of ways we can do something better. I think we're getting to that point. There's a good chance that in my opinion, the digital age and the kind of digital revolution of video games where everything's, you know, physical and digital, and as things start leaning more towards the digital front, I think in our information age now, it's going to be a lot easier to preserve those games. Because like you said, they can keep on a server cluster or something like that. If consoles kind of do the same thing as PCs have been doing and keep similar architecture, then it won't matter how many iterations you go in a console generation, you can still kind of jump back to those older games. So when we're old and 80 something years old and we want to show our great grandchild, little Jimmy, like, let me show you how we gamed back in my day. And we pull out
our PlayStation 45.
Anyway, we pull out the PlayStation 45 and we're playing Uncharted 4 from PlayStation 4. And I'm like, man, Daddy, those graphics look really bad. And I'm like, shut up, you old whippersnapper, and get the hell out of here. It's things like that, and I think that those are good ways that we're preserving that history. I mean, can you think of any cool ways that we're doing or anything that we're not doing that might be a good way of preserving video game history?
So, actually, in chat, Credible Threat, ask Blizzard. They say you think you want Vanilla WoW, but we know you don't. I'm going to agree with them. I don't want Vanilla WoW. I do not want that at all. And that's a different topic. There are too many quality of life improvements that have happened in the years.
I think for, specifically for World of Warcraft, that's a little different because
it's rose-colored glasses, though.
That's a... How old is that game?
It's 14, almost 15 years old or something.
It's... Yeah, 2004.
No, it's 13 years old. It'll be 14 this next year.
Yeah, and so like that's been an on-running game. That's an MMO, and it hasn't really stopped. But no, like for other ideas, like
StarCraft, the OG StarCraft, they did a 4K remaster on it.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
That's a good way of bringing it back.
We'll talk remasters in and of itself. It's funny how we feel about remasters now, but thinking about on the topic of remasters and preserving video game history, when Okami HD was announced.
Oh, I know you lost your mind.
I lost my fucking mind. Oh my God, Okami's coming back. I can't believe it.
I remember when that game came out, man.
Do I have? Oh, I'm going to get a cramp. Oh, I got a cramp on stream. Oh no. Hold on. Where's the game at? I don't have the game. Where's the game, Will?
I don't know. This is your house, man.
That doesn't mean anything. You come over here enough, Will, regardless.
It doesn't make a bit of difference, guys.
No, wait, I found it. Like, I still have the Okami PlayStation 2 original disc, like, in here, and yet I don't have a way of playing this because I don't have a PlayStation 2. Now, we talked about preserving history. I could go back to Gamer's Paradise or...
And pick up an old console that they've either fixed or still works.
Yeah, an old PS2 and play the game as well, but, you know, this game has been re-released on the Wii. It's coming out on PS4 and Xbox One again. And so they're like, again, kind of keeping those games in there. And I think that with remasters and things like that. Like Zone of the Enders. If anybody, you know, one of Konami's lesser known games, the Zone of the Enders series, the first one, the second one is freaking awesome. The second runner.
Yeah.
I'm super happy they're bringing that back.
I have it all on PS3.
I know, but you have your PS3. I'm not going to ask that question. But bringing it back to PS4, because that was one of those games back in the PS2 era that, man, I really wish I could play that. It may not have gotten critical acclaim, but I loved and played that game. Yeah, and now there might be a chance, now that it's remastered in 4K, if it's digital now, that if I can keep it for a few years, I can show my kid and say, hey, look at this game that I played back in the day. They may be like, oh, you know, these lackluster controls, everything's beamed into our eyes right now, Dad. I don't know what you're doing this handheld controls for, but it's still like, no, this is how we used to game.
Yeah, honestly, for me, like, the only reason I still have my PS3 is Budokai 1 and 3. They did the HD re-release.
Oh, they did. Why did they not do 2?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. It was the worst of the three.
Juicin in chat says Okami is worse than Minecraft. I've never played Minecraft, but I was a big fan of Okami when it came out, especially just the art style and especially the gameplay at the time, where you, on the Wii, like you had to use the brush, and it was a Zelda-ish game, and I love Zelda. Had a lot of fun with Zelda.
You have to use your hands? That's a baby game.
That's exactly what the kids are going to say when we get old. When everybody in here, we get old and gray and we can't stream it anymore. And I think remasters in and of themselves, regardless of, you know, they're, I think, as I've said before on stream, everybody has a game that they want remastered. Most of the time people are like, I don't care about that. But when it's the game you want, you're all on it.
Yeah, I mean, perfect example. If they were to do a Blu-ray remaster of Gundam Wing, I guarantee you, people would be lined up at their Walmarts or wherever they're buying it to get this.
I'd buy it. I'd buy that for $1.
But I just use that as an example because a lot of us grew up with Gundam and Dragon Ball and Sailor Moon and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And if people come out with the Blu-ray remasters and re-release, it's a nostalgia hit. You just want to go ahead, just shoot that nostalgia right in your veins, sit back and enjoy.
Well, and like a lot of businesses do that for money, and that's really the short-term thing. But it's, again, looking at it from a reason of preserving video game history, putting these digitally remastering them, these old classics, I mean, Shadow of the Colossus, they're basically remaking that game.
Yeah, they're doing a whole remake.
Yeah, in Final Fantasy VII Remake? Oh, God, when that game comes out, I got to fan myself. Huh.
It'll be out in 2029.
Huh. Yeah, there you go, when I'm infirm and I can't do anything anymore. But again, like talking about the nostalgia and whatnot, it'll be a way for me to show my kids those games. And even then, like we talk about Final Fantasy VII, I'm doing the off-camera stuff today. I've still got the 7, 8... and 9 copies of Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy VIII, and Final Fantasy IX. What?
Don't put those down on the table.
Ooh, love them, don't you? It's just, you know, keeping those. I can't play them, but I didn't want to give them away or trade them. Those are really treasured games for me. And maybe, you know, I saw a feed.
You can play two of those, actually.
Two of them. Not all three, but two of them. Yes, you can.
I can play all three.
But again, I mean, even just two of them officially.
No, the PS3 plays PS1 discs.
Oh, that's right. That's true. I forgot about that one. And if you got the fat one.
No, I don't. The slim PS3 still plays the PS1 disc.
Credible Threat in chat says, lol, 7, boom, 8, boom, 9. I got them all, baby. I got the ones that matter to me. And
7 and 9, all right, 7's okay. It's good. 9, best game ever. We're done.
But no, the fact that PS4 now has them digitally, you can download and purchase them and play them.
And it's like $15 a pop.
Yeah. You can buy them on your phone. You can go to your phone and get those games, like Final Fantasy 1 through whatever.
I think it's 1 through 9 now.
Yeah.
No, they don't have 8.
Yeah, they don't have 8. You're right. You're right. I don't know why people don't love 8 as much. It wasn't bad.
It's Squall. It's his fault.
Yeah, he was kind of whiny. But Steam has them too. And like I said, a lot of different ways that we're really, really, really keeping up with preserving video game history. And I think those remasters, from that video game standpoint, are really helping out, really making a difference in bringing some of our favorite games back into the fold. Like the shooting out examples here, Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah.
The HD trilogy. Like that apparently is still selling gangbusters. And I've never played Crash. I did not really care for the game.
It is what it is, man, but it's the PS1 era.
That's exactly the thing. And if you liked it, you're back on that train. And we again mentioned it earlier. You got the Super NES Classic Edition, you got the NES Classic Edition. You can get those systems now and play those games. Like, it was so cool to feel that controller in my hand again and play Super Mario World the way I did when I was a kid. And Link to the Past, which I never played before, but now I'm playing and enjoying very much.
I need my Game Boy Classic Edition. That's what I need. I need a rechargeable Game Boy Classic Edition.
You don't need that. You want it.
No, I need it.
No, you don't. You don't need it, SpongeBob. You don't need it. I mean, I saw somebody on Facebook today was selling a Game Boy, the blue Game Boy Advance SP. And that was the console that I played Final Fantasy Tactics Advance on to death.
Nah. To see, death. It's got to be that Arctic, or like the purple, the see-through purple. It's got to be that purple.
Okay, that was cool. That was all right.
Just.
That was.
Yeah, Link to the Past. Yes.
It was super. It's okay. Everybody calm down.
Get out of your own house.
I'm going to let you finish, but Ocarina of Time was the best Zelda of all time. No, we're not. Okay. We're not going to have this conversation.
Get out of your own house.
But really sitting there, what other stuff can you think of? That
you know, a console that hasn't gotten much love? N64.
That's
as
true.
As far as, like, yeah, we've got Mario and Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. But not really much else.
That, like,
oh no, Star Fox got the 3DS.
I mean, it had one of the first, in my opinion, true console first person shooters in GoldenEye. Yeah. That was very mainstream and popular. It was a system that really kind of proliferated wrestling games. Like the WWE, WCW and the WWF.
Yeah.
Wrestling games, and like if you're around our age, you loved those games. You just all played them.
You
get
the chair, you beat the hell out of each other.
It was exactly good. And you had a great time. Everybody's yeah. like, yeah, this is great.
And we're not breaking real chairs, so it's good.
But you know, yeah, in 64, I mean, all the consoles have some games that everybody loved, but some of the older Nintendo consoles, most of the Sega consoles, I mean, like, I think
if they hate Sonic, get lost.
Yeah, like, I know other companies are trying. There was that Sega Flashback console. Again, they're trying real hard, but they're not doing a great job on some of those Sega games. And like you said, if it's not Sonic, don't even care about it. What about Time Crisis? This is a very popular game. You can't really find that
or
game.
Or Afterburner.
You can't, like, Time Crisis, you can't really find unless you're in a arcade somewhere. Well,
but Sega's games have always been, except for Sonic, they lent more towards the arcade.
That's true, but like just as far as preserving that history, like unless you're in an arcade, can I play that on Steam? Play that game online? Like Sonic Mania, I think is a cool way of preserving history in the sense that it's not exactly that game, but it preserves that style and that feel of how the game was back in the day
true.
On a newer console. And so I think I don't know. I wish there was. It would be cool if they had. This will never happen unless people get their heads out of their own asses and, like, as far as finding a way to preserve video game history from decades back, but it would be so, so cool to have all, like, some big emulator, and I think we have the technology to do it, to where if people wanted to go back and play those games, they could access those games via, like, some on a PC, like a Steam thing like that, and access all these older games that they wanted to play. And like,
I mean, there's the legitimate way, which is not really there except through Steam, and then there is MAME.
Yeah, and like an official way. There's an unofficial way where you basically can find emulators, and I mean, we've seen emulators that can emulate any freaking game you want.
Any system out there, actually.
And now, what do you do when... Why doesn't that become official? What's holding people back from making that an official thing?
Well, especially if you make it like a game subscription service where yeah. it's like, okay, cool, you can download this and play it. and it's legit.
Yeah, people that are watching on chat, let us know in chat. Like, I would bet that if they offered a service for like $10, $15 a month, even maybe even $20, to be like this huge catalog of NES, Super NES, Sega Genesis, Place PS1, you know, these.
So what you're saying overall is like Netflix for games.
Yeah, Netflix for games. Bringing that in, I would feel like most people, you would pay some subscription fee to join that game, even if it's like to say, oh kids, I'm going to show you how Super Mario was back in the day. You weren't one of the few to get an NES Classic Edition, so now you can pay $10 a month and you can stream this game on your computer and show your kids how this played. Or even, we've been talking about a lot of mainstream games, but some of the obscure games that we played that individually we loved, that we know very well that because of their critical success, quote unquote, or lack thereof, they're not going to be remade anytime soon. But we can still access those games and let people play those games.
No, all I got to say is, back in the day, I used to love Battle Tanks. Global Assault. It's literally, you drive in a tank, and you get different powers and whatnot, and different weapons on your tank. You just blow the hell out of each other.
No, look. Rocket Punch Seal of Approval, I'm telling you right now, and you will agree with me on this. Advance Wars. Why don't we have a new Advance War?
We are. We're about to have one. It's called Wargroove, and it's being made by an indie developer.
Oh, no, what was the other one I showed you? You know, Tiny Metal.
Tiny Metal, yeah.
Tiny Metal, that's one. That's also the 3D one that's coming out soon. But, again, like, why don't we have an official way of doing that? Like, I feel like a company could make a killing if they found an awesome way for people to pay, whether it's a flat fee or a small price for these games, and they'll be able to access them on a PC.
Yeah.
Or some game of that choice there. Without having to necessarily go out. Not that it's bad. I think this is a point of preserving video game history, but you don't have to go out and buy this console to play this game. You can just, okay, let me put this fee in and download it.
I'll hook up a controller and let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Until then, though, it's going to be the guys illegally doing it. They're going to preserve it.
Yeah. I mean, some people have gotten creative, especially with Raspberry Pis. You can take a Raspberry Pi, load the emulator software on there, and basically put a box around it, and you've got a little tiny computer that runs and emulates games about as well as they did on the console of choice, because there's about that much power in them.
Yeah. In some cases, people believe they're actually using Raspberry Pis.
Yeah. But no, I really, really thinking about this topic and preserving video game history, I really hope that we continue. I think we're on the right track with some of the things we talked about, but I really, really hope that we find ways to somehow preserve this history in these games so that we can show future generations, hey, look, this is where you came from.
Yeah.
You know, we go back to where it was the Atari and the Sega Genesis and the NES, and it was this somewhat big console and these cartridges we had to blow onto and these controllers with very...
Sometimes you had a Q-tip and get the dust out of it.
Yeah. You put alcohol on it to take the dust off. And you had these very simplistic controllers and buttons, and you played on this CRT monitor at...
Trying to burn your retinas out
like
as you're
playing this. 100 something P with the screen overlay, and your eyes were hurting. Or if you had stuck your face on a Virtual Boy and got to see red and black forever. And think about that, like the history just of where we were there, and now we came to the point where graphics got better. When the N64 was first shown in the PS1, and we saw those graphics, and we were kids like, oh my God.
Remember the first time you saw Star Wars Episode 1 Racer?
Oh man, that game was so fun. Or just, like, when you saw Super Mario 64, you were used to him in his 2D sprite, 16-bit format, and then they put him in 64-bit
in a 3D realm.
In a 3D realm, and you're like, oh my God, this is crazy. No, this is amazing. Use the Shaq's line here. And the PS1 graphics, and everybody's like, oh my God, these 3D graphics are so good. Then moving on to the PS2 and the PS3, and where we're at right now to where we can sit here together as gamers and play games online, games that are designed specifically for multiplayer online play. We have near realistic graphics. Like, my wife walks in on me watching a cutscene. I remember The Last of Us. She walked in and was like, "Are you watching a movie?" I'm like, "No, I'm playing a game." I'm like, she's like, "What?" And
hang on. That's a Naughty Dog problem.
But in it, like, coming to the point where now you don't have to, if you want to, you don't have to go to the store to purchase a game. You can go online store, buy game, pre-order game. It loads on your console over your internet connection. Like, that huge gap and how far we've come. Like, I think it's so crucial to keep that history and know that history so that we know where we've come, so we can know where we are now and lay the path for where we want to go with video gaming in general.
No, you're not wrong.
I'm sorry, I talked a lot. Any words to wrap up?
I feel like until the publishers and the game, the people actually own the rights to these old games, can get their heads out of their asses and actually look forward and be like, look, can we make long-term revenue off of this? Long-term, not like, oh, let me make a quick $50 by doing this Atari flashback console or whatever, like, or the Nintendo NES Classic or the SNES Classic, actually do like a game subscription service.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll start to see some rapid development.
Yeah.
You'll never see Nintendo titles on a service like that ever.
Oh no. I mean, it kind of brings up the question as well. It's like maybe the reason they didn't really put so much stock in the NES Classic Edition initially, that they just wanted to be a collector's thing and some like little nostalgia to, maybe it was about preserving history. But it brings it to a different part of that topic that we don't have time to talk about now, as far as like, it's unfortunate that we have to go to a point for companies like that to basically, they have to profit somehow in order for us to get them to find a way to preserve that history. And that's a little unfortunate.
Well, but that also shows, though, that they do have them preserved on their corporate servers in some way, form, or fashion there.
Yeah.
You know, they do still have some kind of master plan from them.
Yeah. But no, everybody in chat, let us know what you think about preserving video game history. You can let us know in Twitch chat here. If you're listening via audio on our podcast feed, you can also tweet at us at RockPunchGo. Let us know what you guys think about preserving video game history. Are we doing enough? Are we not doing enough? Definitely let us know there. But let me look at the podcast. I think we're done. Yeah, we are. That is it for episode 80 of the Rocket Punchcast. Guys, thank you so much for joining us in chat, watching the stream, for our Twitch viewers as well as our audio listeners that are listening on podcast services. You can definitely, if you're watching on the stream, definitely click that heart. Follow us here. You can definitely find out so you know when we go live, when we do the Rocket Punchcast every Sunday at 7 on twitch.tv/RocketPunchLive, or when we do our Rocket Punch live streams every Thursday at 8 o'clock. There. We have a question. Credible Threat asks a question for the stream. We now pull out our Q&A segment. Did you see the GameStop's Assassin's Creed Origins ad about locked pre-order content? What was that? Did you see
it? I did not see it, but
is this the Pharaoh content?
I don't know, but if they are locking content that would be available to everybody else behind a pre-order wall that will never be available, I'm not okay with that.
Oh, no, it's interesting because other companies have already done this. What Dragon Ball game was it that did this? They told everybody that you could only get it through pre-order, but then like months later it came out eventually for people to purchase.
No, it was Xenoverse.
It was the first one.
Yeah, and it was part of their like, oh, you buy the pass and we're going to give it to you anyway, but you got it like a couple months before everybody else. It was the blue Goku and Vegeta.
Yeah, but it was a very similar thing that them and Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm 4 did the same thing with Boruto and some of the Boruto characters, where they initially said, oh, these are only available to pre-order customers, but then like a month or a year after the fact, oh, it's available as a season pass now. If you get the season pass, you can get those downloaded as well. They made it, Credible Threat, that is a conversation for another day, I promise you. I 100% promise you.
Yes.
But no, definitely follow. No other questions on chat? No, okay. No, yeah, I mean, that's it for the episode. Like we said at the top of the show, guys, if you didn't tune in, we've got a lot of events going on. You can always go to rocketpunchgo.com to check those out. and see what events are going on. Please follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Our Extra Life stream is now set. We will have everything live starting on Monday the 16th. Is that the right day? Tomorrow? Yeah, Monday the 16th of October. The stream will be on November 17th at 7 p.m. We will be streaming 49 hours. God bless us. For Extra Life, we'll be doing giveaways, prizes, have special guests and stuff on the show. So definitely, again, follow us on Twitch there. You'll definitely know when that and all of our streams go live as well. But other than that, I think we're done.
Yeah, no, we're good. Cast.
Again, everybody who's viewing on Twitch and everyone who is listening live on their podcast service of choice, thank you guys so much for tuning in. You guys listening and interacting and viewing with our content really, really helps us out. It helps us get a word out there on Rocket Punch and what we do. We really appreciate what you guys do. But without further ado, until then.
Well, actually, I want to add one thing real quick.
Oh, one thing, last minute.
So if you're one of our audio listeners, please take a moment to review us on your platform of choice.
Yes.
It helps with discoverability, and it gives us feedback, which is a great tool for us to learn.
Yeah, if we're doing something right, wrong, definitely let us know. Rate and review us on your podcast service, whether you're on iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher or any service like that. Definitely helps us out. But until then, guys, farewell.
Bye.